Thank you for joining us for this repertoire podcast. And now, your host, Scott Adams.
Hey everyone, Scott Adams here with Repertoire Magazine. I have the opportunity today to interview Doug Bryant with Quidel. He is the CEO at Quidel. He has been there for quite a while. I want to say Doug's been there for 10 to 12 years. And when he got there, the business was roughly 150 employees. And today it's 6,000 employees. So they have had tremendous growth, not only with employees, but also in volume. And we get into a handful of things around, you know, the last 2 years with COVID, which I'm always intrigued with those conversations. But then we talk a little bit about also leadership. And this is part of our executive series. And we wanted to interview Doug just because of his interaction, you know, with the White House, with getting COVID testing out as fast as we could, as they could in the last 2 years, and then come back and look at retrospectively kind of what he was able to do or what he learned during those 2 years and what their organization learned during those 2 years. I will give you a little bit of a teaser. We did talk about Doug's mustache a few years back when he was growing his mustache until the stock hit a certain price, which pretty entertaining part of the conversation. But all in all, I mean, just I took a ton from this. The end, he really kind of hones in on some advice for those who are in the middle or new in their career on ways to advance your career, that something I've kind of never heard or thought about. And I like how he framed it. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. It was a great conversation with Doug. And here we go. Doug, so good to have you on the podcast today with the repertoire audience. And I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you around a whole bunch of topics, from leadership to what's been going on the last couple of years. I know you guys have been extremely busy, like everyone in the industry, with COVID and reacting to that. And so thank you so much for being on the podcast today with me.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here. It's always good to speak to your audience, folks that have been super helpful to our company over the time that I've been here.
I'm going to start out the podcast kind of talking about those folks, the distribution audience. I actually got to have a call last week with Paul Manga, who I think you may know. He was very involved with Airbridge and with Warp Speed, or getting the vaccines to market through the private sector. But he brought Quidel up, and you and how much that helped when we were going through the throes of those initial, you know, 6 months of COVID and trying to get product places. And so kind of along those same lines, you know, talk a little bit about how your distribution partners have contributed to be, you know, as quick as they can, as efficient as they can at getting COVID testing and solutions in the hands of, you know, those labs, hospitals, physician offices, kind of the continuum of care.
Sure. Well, we've, Scott, had tremendous relationships with all the major distributors, and each one of them could tell you about their travails along the way in supporting us. We've had a couple of transformational events in recent years, you know, following the acquisition of the Alere assets and our presence in the cardiovascular space. We were thrown off a bit starting in March, early March, actually the 4th, when we were asked to go to the White House to have a conversation around all this testing. From that point onward, our company mobilized and did a number of things that were just surprising and exceptional. But at the same time, you know, our distribution partners equally were stepping up and handling a lot of issues simultaneously. On the consumer side in particular, which really didn't start until, you know, earlier in 2021, I guess by mid-2021, there was a consumer market, if you will. There was significant demand that was beginning to build. And, you know, I could highlight a number of folks, but in particular, the folks at McKesson were especially helpful in terms of giving us access to thousands of independent pharmacies, and also helping with the relationship with Amazon and others. But truthfully, we could not have done any of this without all of our distribution partners, and we're really super thankful for those relationships.
Yeah, I actually got to have a conversation with Stanton McComb from McKesson last week or the week before, and he called me in reference to, he's putting an ad in the magazine in the coming months to just thank you guys, the manufacturers, and then also to thank his sales team of everything they've been going through. And it's so good to hear folks like yourself and him, you know, really recognize the work, not only that you guys have put in, but that they put in on a daily basis to get that, those products and services to those customers when things are just going sideways for the country. You know, as we talk about that a little bit, Doug, what measures has Quidel taken, you know, to meet some of this increased demand for COVID-19 testing? I mean, you guys have had so much going on the last 2 years with acquisitions and then this. You've had to have an amazing strategy in place to be able to take on some of this.
Yeah, when you reflect back on it, as we should, it's a bit daunting. And the pressures that we were under immediately to go from a company that had been manufacturing about 50, 60 million tests per year to a company that last week manufactured 60 million tests during the week. And that doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, I mentioned the meeting on March 4th, 2020. By March 17th, we had a PCR product in market. By May 8th, we had the Sofia SARS product, the first global rapid antigen test. Later in the year, we had other tests, but then we also introduced a combination assay. So it was a lot of work on the R&D side. I'll just start there. And as a result of what's happened to our company, we've gone from a company that was developing about 20 products at one time, 20 products in our portfolio, to a company that now manages about 50 product programs across our company. So the R&D folks in particular stepped up. The clin reg folks running the studies in order to get the EUAs that we ultimately ended up with. I believe the number is 7 products that are EUA'd and available to be shipped here in the United States. So there's that side. We improved our distribution capacity. You can imagine that you can make a lot of tests, but if you can't get them shipped, it doesn't really matter. We had to stand up another 120,000 square feet of distribution capability just to get trucks in and out to move the product. Then in addition to that, in a 9-month period of time, we stood up from basically the studs of a building to a fully fledged manufacturing facility in Carlsbad, which is where we now manufacture the QuickVue products. At the same time, we were dramatically leveraging our footprint south of there in our facility where we manufacture Sofia, and we increased manufacturing lines there. And then along the way, you can imagine that each program, each product that we were manufactured had significant supply chain issues. And this podcast probably isn't long enough to cover all the things that we ran out of from time to time. But I will say this, that it was those supply chain issues that created at times the delay in getting our partners the product they needed to supply their customers. And I would just say to the audience, you know, thanks for your patience. Thanks for believing in us. Thanks for being our partner. As a result, I think we did a lot for the country, a lot for communities across the United States. And we could not have done it, of course, without our distribution partners.
You know, whenever I do one of these podcasts and we start talking about some of this stuff, I know that there's been challenges along the way, and everybody recognizes challenges along the way over these last few years, but you don't think about things like what you just said, where you're talking about, hey, we could make the product. We couldn't get the supply to make product to get it downstream to the end users. You know, Doug, what are some of the challenges, you know, around with your relationship with that's so strong with distribution? You know, what are some of the challenges you guys dealt with during the pandemic? And then, you know, what are some of the measures you took to address those challenges to kind of get your team through that?
Yeah, that's a good question, Scott. I said just a minute ago that we had major supply chain issues, and one of the things that we've done as a result of that was to build redundancies across the system. For example, just the extraction vial into which you put your swab in order to, you know, get the cells off the swab and then take that that liquid, if you will, and use it to run the test. We had one manufacturer that we relied on for years. We're now employing seven.
Wow.
And they're all U.S., by the way. We needed that redundancy. We needed multiple areas, and we also needed people that companies that were fungible in terms of their ability to ramp up, ramp down, and do so comfortably without suffering extreme economic problems. You know, cash flow is a big thing for smaller Huge. Companies. And yep. you know, our ability to work with them to make all that happen was an important part of it. Our company's always done extremely well financially. I mean, our cash flow has been extraordinary. So we were able to weather all that. But I would say the supply chain issues were a really big thing. And the other thing that our partners in distribution would tell you is that while we were making a lot of COVID products, we weren't making a lot of other things. And sometimes it was the other things that were creating the most heartburn for our distribution partners who were trying to take care of customers who needed other things other than just COVID. And so I would imagine that would be true across, you know, all of my colleagues in the industry on the manufacturing side. But, you know, those are the two big things. Supply chain for the things that we needed in order to make more and more COVID at a time when our normal professional customers wanted it, but then the government wanted product and employers wanted products and schools wanted product. And it quickly became a situation where demand was far outstripping what all of us on the manufacturing side could actually manufacture. So a lot going on there in terms of the challenges of the pandemic. But at the end of the day, we're, you know, a much stronger company. And I would have to say our relationships with distribution are also quite strong.
Yeah, I would. Coming from the manufacturing side, the first half of my career, to be able to find suppliers that can ramp up and ramp down and it not cause huge financial issues for them is a huge challenge within itself, because, you know, you're feeding a hungry factory. They need to keep getting fed. So it was amazing that you guys were able to do that. I'm going to shift gears on you a little bit. I know we've talked a little bit about the pandemic and some of that stuff here, but I want to talk a little bit of leadership with you today, Doug. And just, I've watched you from afar, you know, over the last 10, 12 years that you've been there, and how much the business has grown and how much you've changed, the company's changed, but it still has that Quidel unique culture. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, thanks, first of all, for recognizing that that our company is a bit unique. We try to be nimble, quick, decisive. We don't have multiple layers of decision making. I tend to like to hire people, Scott, that have the technical background to do the job that we're asking them to do, of course. We also like to have people who can take their raw intellect and combine that with their sets of experiences over time to give them what I would call a gut feel. And so if a person has that technical skill to do whatever it is that we're asking them to do, and they also have gut feel, they tend to be able to make very good decisions. So we have a culture that says it's okay to make a mistake, but it's better to make more decisions and to move quickly. We don't have to have five out of five decisions that were, you know, absolute winners. I'm okay if we have 8 out of 10. I'd rather have 2 mistakes and 10 decisions rather than 5 perfect decisions. So, you know, that's a part of our culture that I think is a bit unique. And we insist on having people that have, you know, a positive can-do attitude, who are willing to take the risk, to make a decision, to move forward, to live with it, to be accountable. We also spend a lot of time on our company's happiness. And it sounds a bit, it sounds a bit altruistic to say that we believe as an executive team that the happiness of our employees is the most important thing to us. But it's also self-serving, and I would admit it. You know, people who are happy tend to be more productive. And people who are more productive have better outcomes, which in turn makes them happy. So it's this circular thing that we have in our company where we have a bunch of people that are just genuinely happy and productive. And I don't spend a lot of time worrying about the people that are not, because the people that are not happy, which I've called Eeyores before, but you know, people who are unhappy do not like to be around happy people. So what happens is over time, we don't really have to manage that. They tend to go leave and go to work for some other company where, you know, they have more unhappy people to hang around with. And in a funny way, you know, we laugh about this, but in a funny way, people that are truly unhappy are, when able to commiserate with others that are unhappy, are happier in their unhappiness. It just sounds weird, but
I hear what you're saying. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, so it is a little bit unique, and I think it's almost a brand that our company has, where if you call our employees and you talk to them, they're generally just very happy people. And you know, I ask that all the time when I interview people. Do you have friends at work? You know, do you have people that you like to hang around with on the weekends who happen to be also in our company or in your former company? And that's the type of people that we have. And now with this recent acquisition of Ortho, I think it's super important that we take this philosophy, you know, what we call the Quidel way, and we figure out how to imbue that same philosophy in that organization, which sounds easy on the surface, but at the end of the day, there's more of them than there are of us. So, you know, we almost need cultural ambassadors to continue to tell the story, because imagine if we can get all, 6,000 of us or whatever it is now, together to all be super happy in their endeavors and to be thinking about what they can do for not just themselves, but for others in the company, and what we can do for our communities and you know, all of that. That would be the achievement of my career for sure, if I could pull that off.
Doug, just kind of an off the cuff question for you. You just threw out the number 6,000 employees. How many were there when you started at Quidel?
Oh, great question.
Ballpark.
Yeah, I think we had about 130 employees.
Oh my goodness, unbelievable.
We had a super bad quarter, my first quarter on the job, and we ended up laying off 30, which was which was a big thing. Could have been a little bit larger than I was just stating, now that I think of it, but not a whole lot more.
It sounds about right to me from what I remember. That's because when you just said 6,000, I literally kind of gasped. I was like, good gosh, the company has gotten so much.
Well, in the year that I joined in March, Scott, and in June, I believe it was, we had our sales meeting in Las Vegas. And I remember that we had invited others from distribution actually to join us.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Chris Kursky for the first time. That was a long time ago. And we had a picture, a group photo in one of the hotels on a staircase. The entire sales organization fit on one staircase. And so I said at the time to the individual who led the organization, this is the last time we're going to fit on a staircase. So, but you're right. We were quite small. And
it's interesting growth, man. It's fun when you're growing like that, for sure. And Doug, I know there's been tons of challenges over this last, you know, couple of years as a leader, you know, in an organization, especially now one the size that you guys are becoming. You know, how have you been able to balance some of the urgency with the mission you guys do, which has been incredibly important to our country and to the wellness of, you know, the population, but also the well-being of your team members? How have you been able to balance that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. We tried to balance it, but at the end of the day, you're asking people to put themselves at risk to come into work. And one of the things that was recommended by my HR team was that, Doug, you need to communicate with these folks very routinely. And we set up weekly video calls where, you know, I talked about whatever was going on at the time, where we were in terms of processes and accomplishments. And I spent a lot of time recognizing people who had stepped up and made things happen. And I did that routinely. I also shared a bit of my personal life, you know, my daughter's soccer and all that. And it just became even more of a family situation where we created this weekly dialogue where we just kept everybody up to speed. And then I thanked them honestly for stepping up and rising to the challenge of the pandemic. And, you know, we did videos of folks in our factories and throughout the organization and took people's comments. Janine in particular was involved in doing a lot of those interviews and all that. And the positive comments that we were getting back from team members was really quite quite impressive and rewarding, honestly. But balance, I don't know about balance, because for about the first 18 months, I don't think we took a day off.
Yeah.
And just a quick, you know, anecdote. I was on the call with our head of ClinReg, a fellow named Ron Lawler. And at the end, I said to him, you know, hey, Ron, have a great weekend. And he said, what's that? And I said, you know, the 2 days at the end of the week. And he goes, you mean the ones that start with an S? And I said, yeah, those two. Because we honestly worked every day. We came in every morning early and had a meeting, first on the molecular side with those products, but then that went into the other products as well. But we had a daily meeting every single day about what was going on and what we needed to do to get product out the door. So I don't know if we balanced it or not. Doesn't feel like balance, but you know, we did our best to make sure that people felt like we were doing the right thing, that we were making good choices. The way we decided to go to market, the way that we decided to protect the interests of our current customer base, to protect the relationship that we had with distribution partners, those decisions that we made weren't always easy. When we had a fall off in demand as COVID seemed to be abating for a short period of time, one of our competitors actually shut down one or more of their factories. We never did that. We continued to ramp up. We continued to do what we thought was the right thing, and I think that helped with the balance, Scott.
Yeah, for sure. I got to ask this, was the mustache pre or post COVID?
Oh, I think that was pre. the mustache was grown at a time when our share price was at a certain level. And I said I was going to keep the mustache until we hit $75 a share.
I remember walking into Hyde and seeing you with it. And I would ask Abney, I'm like, what is Doug doing with the mustache? And he told me the story. I'm like, that's awesome. That's one of the best things I've heard all year.
Yeah, and I despite what my daughters thought and my wife thought, I grew it and kept it until the day it turned $75 a share. Turned out to be a little bit short-lived, but I took the opportunity that night to shave it off. So, and I haven't and I've been shaving ever since.
So. Genuinely is one of, it was one of the best things that year. Is so funny to me. It cracked me up. I loved it. I thought it was great. Doug, COVID has definitely been called a great disruptor, as we all know, and it has changed a ton of things. And I talk to people all the time, just in my personal life, of some of the things that it changed for me. And I was blessed to be able to spend the shelter in place time with my youngest son, who's now 26. He had just graduated from college and had come home. And it was so cool to just get those few months, just him and I at the house, because we weren't really going anywhere or doing anything. You know, as you look at it, as you kind of step back and like you just said, you guys were going at it, you know, ding to dong every day for 18 straight months without a weekend. You know, what are some of the positives that you've seen in the supply chain, you know, in these last 2 years that maybe not otherwise would have come to light if we hadn't kind of had to take a pause and do some of this stuff?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. Something so disruptive, what are the positives that have come out of it? I think your example about the relationships you have with people at home is probably the best. I would say also that just from the business side of things, that we weren't really the size company that could compete with these very large companies before. And it wasn't because we weren't innovative enough. It wasn't because we didn't have the technical talent. It's because we didn't have scale. And now that we've gone through this exercise, we certainly have scale and we can compete with these other larger companies as we enter new markets. We're not going to be held back by our inability to supply product relative to what they're doing. So that's a really big thing for us, the increased manufacturing capability. Sounds simple on the surface, but it's multifaceted. And, you know, just hiring the number of people that you need to stand up a new factory. You know, we hired 400 people up in Carlsbad. It's significant enough number of people that, you know, the mayor of Carlsbad is thankful, right? So, that's one aspect. The R&D capabilities, the ability, because of our brand strength now through corporate partnerships, the brand strength that we now have enables us to hire the talent that we need in the R&D and engineering side. So these are the things that from a business perspective, as a result, have really been transformational for us. The other aspect, and I'll stop with this point, is we've generated a lot of cash. And by the middle of this year, we'll still be sitting on, you know, $1.5 billion or so in cash. And, you know, the ability to access capital markets and to have cash coupled with cash on your balance sheet has enabled us to look at other things that we might do, investments that we might make. And certainly the Ortho acquisition, which, you know, is not yet closed, but certainly was signed, that could not have happened, I don't think, had we not gone through the exercise that we just did over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said earlier, your growth has just been incredible. I want to make sure I value your time. I know I've held you a little longer than we anticipated. So I have one last question for you. And I asked this when I interviewed Mike Abney last month. And I always like to hear about people's mentors and leaders that maybe made an impact in their life. And is there somebody out there that over your career kind of helped, maybe mentored you and invested their time into helping you in your career journey? And you're welcome to tell a story or two about them if you'd like.
Yeah, I really don't have somebody that pops into my mind because I've had the opportunity, much like Mike Abney has, to be around a number of people that were really people that I could observe and emulate. Mentor, I don't know. I mean, I've had some folks that were pretty good at what they did, and they were definitely worth observing and patterning myself after. But I think, for a career and thinking about a career and how, that progresses over time. I'm, 35 years into this now. So when I think about it, I never really planned a career. I just did the best I could in everything that I was asked to do. And then as a result, I would be asked to do other things. And that was what motivated me, was the opportunity to take on board positions of increasing responsibility over time. So for me, it's never been about a series of jobs or job titles. It's been more about a series of accomplishments, getting things done such that I would be asked to do something else. So I don't really have anybody like Mike can name people. I mean, he's got, John Sasson and others who, he's had the fortune and opportunity to work alongside. I could name some folks. I'm a little bit reluctant because I don't want to not name somebody that I should. But I've been around for so long that I've had so many people that have had a positive influence on me one way or another. And I would say to those folks who are trying to manage their career, who might be a little bit earlier in the process, be self-reflective. Everything that you do, try to think, how well did I do it? Could I have done it better? Also, what are the things that I did that were really useful? Watching people that are successful, what makes them successful? And is there something that I can learn there? I would say most important thing about having a long and prosperous career is to be observant, but also self-reflective.
Yeah, I loved your advice there on, I tried to do everything I could to make sure I got asked to do more. And I think that's a great, valuable lesson for someone young in their career that's starting out, and 30 years in myself. I've never really looked at it that way. I think that's an excellent way to look at, where you're headed, and try to do the best you're doing at what you're doing that day. So you get asked to do more over the course of a career, and you'll look back and have had a wonderful career.
Yeah. And all right, thank you, Scott. And then in our company, we're fond of saying, do your best and forget the rest. And I think that's a nice way to think about your work every day.
100%. Doug, I appreciate your time, man. I always enjoy talking with you, and especially talking about these last few years and just all of the things you guys went through to help the country and to help distribution, and distribution to help you. And just appreciate you, and congratulations on the success and the size of the business and where you guys are, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I always enjoy talking with folks that are in a different side of the business or a different career path than what I have been on in the industry, and just getting to listen to their stories. And hopefully you took a bunch out of that. So interesting to hear these organizations who had just firsthand experiences with dealing with COVID and getting COVID tests and just making sure that things were where they needed to be. So hopefully you enjoyed that podcast. We'll have more to come. Again, this was part of our Repertoire's Executive Series, and I've got a handful more this year. Thank you so much for listening, and good luck this week out there selling. Have a great day.